Date is August the 10th of 2004, so I just picked up 14 years here. So, although I heard John LaRocque, the actor, he was on the Phil Donahue show, and some lady was congratulating for not drinking. It was in the audience, and she said, congratulating an alcoholic for not drinking is like congratulating a cowboy with hemorrhoids for not getting on his horse. Yeah, and congratulations for finally doing what I should have been doing all along. So, and this is the third time we've done this, and this is my friend Dana. So.
Hey, my name is Dana. I'm a real alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 28th, 1996, and I'm blessed to be here with you all today. It's going to be good. I get through steps 8 and 9 and see what we can get out of it today. So it's going to be good.
All right. Yeah, we've done 4 and 5, 6 and 7 last year, and just 8 and 9. Next year we're going to mix it up. There'll be somebody else doing this stuff. So this is what we're up to. Now, we use these slides because we're going to be talking about stuff that's in the 12 and 12 in the big book, and some things consolidate several paragraphs together. So it'd be you guys flipping around through a lot of books, or just we'll show it to you what's here on the screen. So that's the reason we do that, and I get to have a little fun with some pictures, too. So I'm going to first start about kind of an overview of what we're going to try and do. We're going to try and talk a little bit of the overview of these steps that start out the process of addressing relationships. And if you look in the 12 and 12 in the table of contents, when Bill talks about the paragraph that describes, he says steps 8, the next 3 steps involve relationships, which is 8, 9, and 10. So for me, what Bill wanted to change the word in the third step prayer and take the word victory out of there and put the word transcendence in. And that's in As Bill Sees It, if you look on page 210. And it's a very good word. I thought victory was out of place when I first heard it. And I like the word transcendence because this is a transcending for me from living a life based on outcomes. You know, Bill said we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. I think we should say we put A1 Abrams tank tread marks over their backs as we try and get to the outcome. And if I'm in a relationship and you can help me get to the outcome, then I'm using you to help me get to the outcome. And one of the guys in my home group said, I need to get out of the outcomes business. You know what's crazy for the alcoholic? You get the outcome, and was it ever enough?
Never.
So what I do is I'm transcending. You look at step 4, and what are we doing? We're saying resentments. Somebody's blocking me from getting an outcome, so I get this resentment. Or fear. I'm somehow not going to get that outcome, so I get this resentment. Then I go into step 5, and I start talking to God, myself, and another human being. Well, those are 3 relationships. So now I'm starting to shift over to a relationship-based life. Then 6 and 7 say, for me, that I need to recognize I got these character defects, but stop working on me. Let God remove the character defects while I try and practice these principles in all my affairs. And those principles are relationship-based. Look at them. Brotherly love, service, honesty, integrity, kindness. Okay? So this is the start of these steps where I was listening to Bill today in 1965 at the Toronto. And it was his Saturday evening speech where he introduced the concept of I am responsible. And he said something very amazing. He said, more and more we began to look for this willingly responsible. You know? And the other thing I think is the other transcendence here is going from being a victim to being a servant. Going from the, you know, and victims don't last very long in AA. You know, just try and take your victim status to your sponsor somewhere and let me know how that works out. All right, so we're going to start out with the 12 and 12. And I love this image. It's 3 guys standing on these puzzle pieces and one guy's loose and they're reaching out. You know, this is about, I think an alcoholic in our cups is one of the loneliest creatures on earth. You know, that feeling of isolation. So here it is, and this says steps 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relations. First, we took a look backwards Does anybody remember where else we took a look backwards?
Step four.
Page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. So here's another step where we're looking backwards. And it says, and try to discover where we have been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we have done. So this is kind of an overview of 8 and 9, right? So it starts with a looking back. And then a vigorous attempt, we've heard vigorous before, right? Right on page 63 and 64 in the fourth step. To repair the damage we have done. And third, having thus cleared away the debris of the past, we consider how with our newfound knowledge of ourselves. I like that, my newfound knowledge of myself. I've got a different definition of who I am. Who I am. Today I begin to know who I am. And you know, that's the only two things I ever really want to know in life. What is my purpose and who am I? And I think I've found those here with you. We may develop, sorry. No guarantees here. We may develop, and Bill uses this word a lot, best possible. Isn't that, if you look around, he talked about the traditions, best possible. And I like this idea. What's the best possible response that I can have in this situation? What's the best possible? I won't ever find out what the best, but at least if I'm asking the question, I can get there. And relations, and here we are, with every human being we know. Dana?
Yeah, I mean, when I look at this and I think about it, you know, the word vigorous means with a lot of effort, you know, so we have to put a lot of effort into this thing. And the big thing that sticks out to me is repair the damage. You know, I think so many of us, including myself, when I first came in, I wanted to say I was sorry all the time. I'm sorry, you know. And today, you know, I want to repair the damage. You know, if I go run over somebody's mailbox, right, they don't want to hear I'm sorry. They want a new mailbox, you know. And so, you know, that's what we're here to do, is to repair the damage. And then one of the things that I like about it is in you know, this newfound knowledge and in these relationships, I don't want to put any more skeletons back in my closet. You know, I mean, I've put enough of them in there, and when I looked at step 4, 5, 6, and 7, I was able to identify those and get rid of them, and I don't have to have that burden anymore. You know what I mean? And so when I get rid of this and repair the damage, then I think that I can look the world in the eyes, as the book says again. So that's it I have for this.
Cool. This is one, I have a little card I hand out to people, and I put this on the back of the card. And I think it's one of the more amazing statements in our literature for me. And it's on page 77 again. Learning, I think that's the key word there, learning how to live in the greatest peace, partnership, and brotherhood with all men and women of whatever description is a moving and fascinating adventure. So when you're upset with somebody, you're about to have a moving and fascinating adventure. And it's not resolving it. It's not the outcome of the relationship. It's the learning part of it. And if I can live by that right there. And by the way, you know who's making the description? Me. I love this. I heard this lady it was a doctor, non-alcoholic, at the International, talking about a lady who wrote a book. But what she just said was fascinating. She said, the universe is not composed of atoms. It's composed of stories. And I realized, in fact, we have a story about atoms. It started with a drunk in 600 B.C. He liked to drink wine, and he started talking about cutting things in half, and eventually he couldn't cut them in half. In 1800, they found something they thought they couldn't cut in half, and they called it an atom. Then we found out we couldn't cut it. We could cut it in half in lots of pieces, but we didn't change the name. So atoms aren't atoms anyway. So all of a sudden it was a story. An atom is a story. Everything. What I think you're thinking about me right now is not what you're thinking about me. What I think you've been through today is not what you've been through today. It's a story. There's one fact I know. There's something in me watching the story go on. That's what I know I am today. So today, this becomes, this whole process of 8, 9, and 10 and doing all this is because I can then live in the greatest peace, partnership, and brotherhood. And there's no loneliness in there. but I can't do this if I got alcohol in me. I know that for absolute sure. And I know I can't do this alone. I need God's help and I need your help. Dana.
You know, I look at this and I think about it and it sounds good, right? You read that and it looks at, look at it and it looks good to you. But then I got to sit down and think, what do I really want out of life? You know, what am I looking for? You know, and to live in that partnership and in that peace with other people and stuff like that. Was that what I was looking for in a bottle? You know, I don't know. You know, but I know today, when I look at my life and I look at what are my greatest assets, you know, what are the things that make me the happiness? And those are the things. It's the friends and the family that I have and that peace that I have inside of me that I've gained through living the steps and working the principles, you know. And so I like that statement, and it's short, but it's really to the point. So I'm good.
Okay. Dana, why don't you take on this one, then, our real purpose.
Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God in the people about us. And you know, it's easy to read over that and you look at it and how do you fit yourself to be of maximum purpose to God? And I say you do it by working the steps. You know, that's how I get to be of maximum service to God. And then the people about us, and the most important thing that I think about when I read over that is it's not just about other alcoholics. You know, in my life, throughout my day, you know, I encounter a lot of people, not all of them alcoholic, in business and friends and well, most of my friends anyway are in recovery. But, you know, the people about us, I want to be of that maximum service, you know. And, you know, Damon, you were talking about it earlier when you started. You know, we run over people. We selfish and self-centered, and we do what we want to do whenever we want to do it. And that's not of being maximum service to the people about us. That's being maximum service to myself. You know, so I want to fit myself to be of maximum service to everybody, you know. And one of the things that we do when we go through the big book is we talk a little bit about when it said there's a price to be paid for your recovery, and it's the destruction of self-centeredness. And one of the exercises we do is we try to do 5 selfless acts a day. You know, 5 times a day you do something for somebody else and you don't tell anybody. And that helps you to be selfless, not selfish. And, you know, it's a practice. I practiced being selfish my whole life, you know, and now I got to practice being selfless. And by practicing being selfless, I'm of maximum service to others.
Yeah, thank you, Dana. It was Scott L. of Nashville who pointed out the biggest word in that whole thing is fit. Not to be of maximum service, because that's an outcome. Fit is something I do now. You go to the gym and you get fit. It's a now word. And I think it changes everything. Now, the only other thing I would change in this from what Bill says is I'd say the others about us, because it includes plants and animals, and my wife collects both. In fact, she collects species, and I think I was the first one she collected. But, so, I mean, we got chickens and geese and goats and all kinds of stuff there. So, oh my. But anyway. So here we've got step 8. I love this picture, this kid. You know, and we're kind of kids when we come here, aren't we? He's got his glasses on. He's got this thoughtful look. He's got a pen out. He's got a book. Laying on the floor with his feet up, looking back, you know, and he's getting ready to write. Now, this state of being, I think you got to get by making it through 1 through 7. I think we begin to get our innocence back, and now we're ready to go do this. And so I like the image of that. And those big glasses, now I can see something I couldn't see before. So it says, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. You know, being willing to all of a sudden become willing, that's almost like the greatest gift I was given. I go to the jail meetings. There's a guy there. He's 57 years old, 16 DUIs. And he's looking back on his life and says, why do I keep doing what I keep doing? And I don't know what's different between me and him. That willingness, I cannot take credit for it because I didn't create me. If I created me, then I could take credit for something about who I am, what I am, and what I do. And Bill says in that 7-step prayer, the first words are what? Our Creator. And all I know today is, it ain't me. I know I've got a lot of ancestors. I've got a lot of ancestors. And I today, everything today that I am is a gift. And that's that innocence, the child. I'm newborn. We were reborn, right? So, Bill first starts talking about the obstacles, and the image here is a brick wall with one arrow going over, another one going under, and another one going around. So these are the obstacles that could exist for us to want to become willing to do this step. And so these are from the 12 and 12 pages, 78 and 79. I've condensed them down into the bullet points, but this is in the text, okay, word for word. The first and one of the most difficult has to do with forgiveness. And I think one of the greatest tools I have in my spiritual toolkit is forgiveness. Now, I had, in the beginning, before I came in the program, I would forgive you if you deserved to be forgiven. And that meant you had made amends back to me and changed all your behavior. And, right. Then that's a story again, right? So now I get in the program and I go, well, I'm now going to forgive you because I deserve to be a forgiving person. And that worked for a while. But I don't think it was the best possible. You know, we go back to that. So today, my definition of forgiveness is, I forgive you because the people around me deserve to have me be a forgiving person. And that's a relationship statement. One of the great talkers out there, a guy I got to meet, was Ed Mutum. And his story of forgiveness made the national news. And on the cross, what is it? Forgive them, for they know not what they do. And what this had to start out with is I had to realize that if I knew back then when I was drinking and going to massage parlors and doing all this stuff, acting out as a married man, if I knew back then what I know now, I wouldn't have done that. Because I wanted the way I thought I would feel when I got it. And it was never enough. And today I have what I love, that phrase, it is vastly more than that. Any comments on the forgiveness?
I know the only, and we'll get into it a little bit further, is a little bit about the action to be deferred. And you know, we'll talk a little bit about how that is to be done, you know, as we go through our steps, because there's some clear-cut direction to how to handle that. And, you know, we also talks a little bit about that we're only hurting ourselves, and in the big book it talks about the alcoholic being that tornado roaring through the lives of others. I was just so selfish and so centered, I couldn't even see how I was hurting others. Or I would rationalize and justify it, you know, so I could actually somehow live with myself.
Okay. Yeah, so that first one was about forgiveness. The second obstacle is we got a pretty severe shock when we realized that we were preparing to make a face-to-face admission of our wretched conduct of those we had hurt. You know, can I just write a letter? But it says direct, okay, wherever possible. And wherever is a little different than whenever. Wherever has space considerations to it, and yeah. And then we clung to the claim that when drinking, we never hurt anybody but ourselves. Purposeful forgetting. And today I've been able to, you know, with my daughter, she was only like 13, you know, that was really when I got sober, 13 or 14. Did anybody see the movie The Neverending Story? Remember that? And they had the nothing. And they said, well, what was it? And they said, well, if it was something, it would be something. And that's kind of what I was. I just disappeared, you know, in the lives, and I was not there for them. Well, we're in the process right now of adding a 3-bedroom, 2-bath extension for my daughter to move in with my grandson. And she likes the extended family part of it. And together we're very close. And she quit drinking a year and a half ago, and we didn't even talk about it for 6 or 8 months. I just kind of noticed it. And she said, I heard you talk about not quitting, but this is a program, this is about starting. And she's now doing that. And my son now has 12 years. And I can't take credit for that. But I watched him get this thing. And I think, you know, I can be there for them today. And the final one, though, is in some cases we cannot make restitution at all. And in some cases, action ought to be deferred. So these are all the different obstacles we see. This is why I need a sponsor for this process. I need somebody who's been through this or knows other people who have been through it. So we talked about the obstacles, but let's also talk about the rewards. Bill was a salesman, you know, and I've heard it said that as a salesman, you do not talk about price until you've established value. So what are the rewards here? Since defective relations with other human beings have nearly always been the immediate cause of our woes, anybody identify? Yeah, isn't that it? Including our alcoholism, no field of investigation could yield more satisfying and valuable rewards than this one. That's a big statement. You mean, what about my resentments? Well, what about investigating, you know, these defective relationships? So calm, thoughtful reflection upon personal relations can deepen our insight. I think this is a reward, being able to have calm, thoughtful reflection upon personal relations, rather than calling up your friends and talking about who did you, this person did this to me and that person did that to me. You know, I'm a victim of circumstance. I'm a victim of circumstance. Dana.
You know, I don't know about y'all, but I don't do anything for nothing. You know what I mean? I go to work because I get paid to go to work, and I live the program and work the program because I get rewards from it. And, you know, doing these type of steps and doing this kind of work, there's these rewards. And to Damon's point, you know, these relationships that I have are so much better than they ever were due to the work that I do in here and the steps that I continue to take in my daily life.
And that was from page 80 of the 12 and 12. So now we have basic flaws, and on here is an image of a tricycle and the front wheel is square. So there's a basic flaw here, okay? And this was kind of what my makeup was. You know, on the outside it's painted really good. Have you noticed that? It's got the seats on straight, everything. But it's got this one little defect, okay? And you know, you can sit on it, do whatever you want. So, Dana, why don't you read that?
All right, basic flaws. We go far beyond those things which were superficially wrong with us. To see those flaws which were basic, flaws which sometimes were responsible for the whole pattern of our lives. Thoroughness, we have found, will pay and pay handsomely. You know, when you go through your four and five and you start getting rid of these character defects and all this stuff, and that's where you get your list from, you know, You have to get rid of everything. You can't just take parts of it and hold on to them. You know, I always, whenever I'm doing that kind of step work with a sponsee, you know, when we get into five, they start going through their things. You know, I stole an apple when I was a kid. I was not good to my wife or whatever it was. And they go through it and you can see them in their tents, you know, and I stop them and I say, all right, I want to know three things that you would never tell anybody. And they inevitably say, well, no, there wasn't anything. And I'm like, okay, I'm sure there was, but you know, and then they do. And then they tell you this one thing. And to them, it's horrible and it's really daunting and all of these type of things. And, to the person listening to it, it's not that big of a deal. We've probably done things worse ourselves. But then you can see their shoulders relax and their jaw relax and their whole demeanor change, because whatever that thing was so overwhelming to them, you know, and some of these flaws were basic, but some of them were really, really heavy on them. And that's the things that we need to get rid of. And that's when I look at the word thoroughness, you know, and it talks about humility and fear along with that, you know, because what I'm thinking is, if I tell you this, I'm scared to think what you're going to think about me. And I don't have enough faith in God that it's going to be okay. You know what I mean? And so, to me, these flaws got to go. You know what I mean? They got to go. And by listing them out and getting rid of them and doing the work through step nine will free you. And that's where I get from here, is such a word of freedom.
By the way, that's on page 12 and 12, the 12 and 12, page 80. My sponsor told me that his chicken died. So anyway, so we made a list, and this is from page 81. Having carefully surveyed the whole area of human relations, and we've done that through the inventory process and the fifth step, And having decided exactly what personality traits in us injured and disturbed others, we can now commence to ransack memory for the people to whom we have given offense. And for me, what I found out, the nature of my wrong, which I think is a neat word in the fifth step, the nature of my wrong is I treated everybody as an object. I was treating people as objects. And it was that square wheel. And it made nothing else work. And until I began to see other people as we're all part of the same thing. I love what this one guy said. He said, "I do not have life. I am what life is doing right now." And it just changed. It changes all the things around. Because each and every one of us, if you want to put it this way, each and every one of you is what God is doing right now. And it gets a different, it's a we perspective, which I really like. So, we've made the list. I think you want to go on to the next one?
I think we're good with that.
Okay. Back through our lives, and here's a calendar, just the years going backwards, and this is back to like what we do on the fourth. We put a finger on the nearby and most deeply damaged one shouldn't be too hard to do. Yeah. Then, as year by year we walk back through our lives, as far as memory will reach, we shall be bound to construct a long list of people who have to some extent or other been affected. We should, of course, ponder and weigh each instance carefully. Dana?
Yeah, I mean, the fresh things, the I call them low-hanging fruit. You know, your family, your children, your employment, you know, those things are easily obtainable in your mind. You know, you think about them and they kind of make you feel queasy inside and stuff like that. But when you look at this, you got to go way back because, you know, it's the pattern. You know, what started this behavior in the first place? You know what I mean? What started all of this behavior? And as you look back over your using career, and you know, I was with one of the guys from the extension the other day, and he's, you know, working on this type of work right now, and you know, he had a couple names on the list, and I said, "You got to go way back." And he said, "Why? I don't have any feelings around that." And I said, "You got to go back because they started the feelings, you know, and they started these type of feelings inside of you that caused you to act the way that you acted." And I think another thing too is one of the things it's the blame game. You know, who did you blame? You know, what, you know, there's another part of it. Who did you blame for something going on? And then if you can free that up in somebody's mind, that list can get longer, you know, and get longer and longer. And then, as you all know who've done your fifth step, you go through this information and you start to develop these patterns. And that's all we're looking for is these patterns. And the way the steps are laid out, you know what I mean? It just follows a natural progression on everything's going to go. And on the previous slide, one thing, you know, they said we made this list. Well, the list is easy to make because you have it in your fourth step. You know what I mean? That's why you don't get rid of it. Don't leave it for anybody to find it, but go ahead and make sure that you keep your list. And then once you have your list, you know, you should be able, by this time, you should have a pretty good list and gone back pretty far. If you worked with your sponsor and done your work properly, you should have a pretty good list from the low-hanging fruit to the stuff that you don't really understand right now, but you got to make amends for it. Okay?
So here we have this image of these two little rocks, a big long rock, and then on either end a balancing of things. And I love, this is the tone to go into 8 and 9. It's very tonal. I love to play guitar, and there's certain tones to certain kinds of music. And I think of it this way, or the colors, if you're an artist, to go into it. We shall want to hold ourselves to the course of admitting the things we have done, meanwhile forgiving the wrongs done us, real or fancied. I love that. You know, because remember, it's just stories. You see, I can change the universe that quick because I change the story I'm telling myself about what's going on. And I think each one of the steps could be renamed change the story. Step one, change the story. Step two, I'm not insane, change the story. You know? Step three for me was there is no God. I came in as an atheist. Today, they just said, why don't you start acting as if there is a God? And I started doing that, and some remarkable things happened. And they happen to me all the time. So this idea, we should, and this again, page 81, 82 of the 12 and 12, we should avoid extreme judgments. That means either direction. You know, putting somebody on a pedestal or trying to dig their early grave, you know, either one. Okay, both of ourselves and of others involved. So I need to also a balanced opinion. I think because we're in here, you're seekers. There's something basically good in you that brought you here this morning. There's a guy who's now got 43 years in the program. He calls himself a psychopath. I said, no, you're not. And he said, what do you mean? I've done all this stuff. And I said, yeah, but you're here. There's something in you that wants this. And I think that's the beauty of this deal, finding that. Okay? We must not exaggerate our defects or theirs. A quiet, objective view will be our steadfast aim. Dana.
You know, I love the forgiving wrongs done us. You know, it's so freeing. You know what I mean? You know, some of the things that have been done to us just aren't our fault. You know what I mean? But they still hold us in this bondage, you know, and they're so miserable, and it's just forgiving them. You know what I mean? If I'm trying to get this new outlook on life, and then in the big book, it talks about recreating our lives in the beginning of the big book. You know, I don't want any part of my old life back. And some of those parts of my old life are really painful and harm's done to me, you know, but at the end of the day, I've got to forgive them and then I can be free. And get rid of this stuff, you know, and it talks about real or fancied. You know, my first addiction, I think, was fantasy, because I could make these stories up in my head and I could believe them. You know, I would make these movies up, you know, hire the actors and everybody's good. And, you know, but it was all fantasy. It wasn't real, you know, fancied or real. So I'm good with that, Damon.
Yeah, I remember going hiking up in Chatsworth, Cahuta Wilderness, with my grandson. The young guys were already up on top of Ford Mountain, and here me and another one of the old guys are trudging up there. Got the, you know, 40, 50-pound backpacks, you know, and they're all setting up their hammocks and everything. I get up to the top of the mountain, and I take that backpack off. And I felt like I was floating off of the mountain. And this is, we're carrying around a bag of rocks. Yeah, you know, they're like, oh, they're my rocks, you know. I've had them for a long time. My sponsor, one of his favorite phrases is, we like what we know. Whoa, does that come back a lot? We like what we know. Dana, why don't you read this one?
Beginning of the end of isolation. Whenever your pencil falters, we can fortify and cheer ourselves by remembering what AA experience in the steps has meant to others. It is the beginning of the end of isolation from our fellows and from God. You know, for me, I look at my life and, you know, I was so isolated from people because I didn't really want people to see what I was. I was so ashamed of what I was and what I was doing. And, you know, I only put people around me that would co-sign it. You know what I mean? And they, most of them were not really good people, you know? And, I can be lonely in a room full of people. You know, I can be lonely in a room full of y'all right now if I don't reach out and talk to y'all and get to know you all. You know, I don't expect, you know, everybody in here to be best friends, but all of us in here want the same thing, and that's for each one of us to stay sober. You know, and that's that bond that keeps us together. And, you know, certainly this isolation from God, because God forbid, you know, that somebody could see what I was doing, and that would be God. And we all know now God was watching everything. And the ironic part about it is it was all this preparation of these miserable, rotten things that I was doing, you know, to be sober today and be of maximum service to God and the people about me. It was all this preparation for that, you know. And today, I don't isolate. I'm out. I'm seeing people. I feel like God can look at me and I'm okay with what He sees. I'm not perfect by any means, you know, but I think I'm better than I used to be. And at least the thing that at least I know when I'm wrong, you know, or know when I'm not doing something that I was before. I didn't even think about it. You know, it's just like, I'm just going to do this with no regard to anybody or God or anybody else. So that's all I have on that, Damon.
Yeah, and the image is these blue paper dolls all just cut out from the same cloth, and then this one different colored one separated, but them welcoming them in. When I was searching around and reading about all kinds of religions and everything, because I was seeking God through a lot of my life, I recognized that one of the tenets of almost every major religion in the world, a fundamental idea, is the idea of unity. And whichever one you want to pick, just look into it in depth, and you'll find out that that's that connectedness. And what I find out, you got the first tradition. And what is the first tradition? Our common welfare comes first. So that first tradition is the goal. And I find out if I practice the traditions in my relationships, each one of those, the rest of those traditions is a sacrifice that my ego needs to make in order to achieve the unity. So if you want to even to go to the next, go to another level on this deal, sit down with your sponsor or somebody else or a group of people and go through the traditions as a way of building and holding on to relationships. Because if it works for a group of drunks, imagine what it works for some semi-normal people. Although I like this guy Ken, he said if the world made sense, men would ride side saddle.
We don't hold the corner on insanity. I think what makes me an alcoholic is the effect alcohol has on me when I drink it.
So again, that's page 82 of the 12 and 12. So now we're going to come into step 9. Picture two people sitting across the table and both talking, you know. And I like that the balloons, you know, kind of are blank. You know, well, let's fill in the blank, whatever. And part of this is, this should be my expectation of what's going to happen when I start making this amends. Not trying to anticipate what the other person's going to say. You know, and just go in there, because now I should have, I should beginning to be able to trust the power behind these principles. It's held me so far through my fourth step and my fifth and sixth and seventh. See, this is why I need to begin to get God consciousness to make this happen. Because if I'm just trying to do it alone, I'm a sitting duck. But if I'm beginning to get connected with you guys, and I know you're back there to cover my back and help me out with this deal, then this is great. So we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So, Dana, and it's a long one. This is back to Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book, page 76. And this is right after the seventh step. And I'll let Dana take it on for here.
All right. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away debris which have accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed that that in the beginning that we would go to any lengths to victory over alcohol. You know, we talked about it a little bit earlier. We talked a little bit about that list, you know, and it takes it from the 12 and 12, and it takes it from the big book. You know, you've got it from your inventory, from your four-step inventory. And, you know, there again, it talks a little bit about repairing the damage. You know, it's the mailbox thing. You know, I'm out there to repair the damage. And a lot of my amends are living amends. You know, I'm still living my amends today to a lot of my friends, my family. And sweep away the debris that is accumulated out of an effort to live self-will and run the show ourselves. And you know, that's one of the things that happens is you sweep away this debris, this garbage. You know, I talk about, you know, you have this closet, and in this closet are all these skeletons and all of this misery and all this stuff that you've put in this closet over the years. And you get rid of it, you know, in your 4, 5, 6, 7, and now in 8 and 9, we're getting rid of all of this garbage, and we're praying about it, and we're doing all these things. Why in God's name would ever want to start putting skeletons back in that closet? And, you know, I always think this is, and one of the things I'm real big on is keeping my side of the street clean, you know, and that's what one of my standard questions, if I'm doing something, am I keeping my side of the street clean? And it's, my daughter, she's 23, so I'm 22 years sober this year, so she's been around me since she was 1 year sober, since I was 1 year sober. And she's been to meetings with me, and she's been to book studies with me, and she's been around the program, and she called me from college one time, and there was a bunch of drama going on. That's a shocker. And she's telling me about all this stuff and all this stuff. And she goes, "But don't worry, Dad, I'm keeping my side of the street clean." And I was like, "Yes, something stuck." And in the bottom of this, it says, you know, if we haven't the will to do this, we ask till it comes. And sometime I got to pray to be willing. You know, I've got to pray to be willing to do this stuff. You know, Damon talked a little bit about that bag of rocks, but there are bag of rocks. I get it. You know what I mean? That's how I've lived my whole life, you know, and it's hard sometimes to be willing to get rid of that stuff. You know what I mean? And some, like I said, I pray to be willing. And the last part of it is, you know, the victory over alcohol. And, you know, you see people, and I hope this isn't being judgmental, but you see people coming into the program and their life is miserable. Their life's on fire. There's a lot of problems. There's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. I mean, and you ask them, you know, and you say, you know, are you willing to go to any lengths? And they're like, sure, I'm ready. You know, I'll call you every day. I'll go to meetings. I'll do all this stuff. And they're, yeah, I'm ready to go. And then as the fire turns down a little bit, they become less willing. And to me, that victory, you know, I want to beat this alcoholism. And it's not about not drinking. I want to get rid of this alcoholic mind, these alcoholic tendencies, the way I think, the way I act and all this stuff. I want victory over that. And I feel like I've achieved victory over that, you know, by what I'm doing, you know. And today, I feel like I will stay willing to do these things as long as I keep doing the things that I've been doing. You know, I talk to people a lot about what do I do to stay sober. And it's the same thing that I've been doing for as long as I've been sober. I go to a certain amount of meetings. I talk to people every day. I teach the big book. I pray. I meditate. I work the principles in my life. I do all these things. Which one of those is my life going to get so important that I'm willing to give up? That I'm going to give up the chance to have that victory over alcohol. And I'm not willing to give up any of them. You know, I'm just not, because it is infinitely such a better life than what I had when I was out there. So that's what I have for that.
Yeah, it's been a realization for me just recently that, you know, it talks about in the doctor's opinion that we have an obsession of the mind, which is when I have no alcohol in me at all. And I just keep thinking about that drink. And then once I take the drink, that's when the phenomenon of craving comes in. And I just realized recently I can do the same thing with sobriety. Okay, I can have an obsession and say, I want this thing, you know. But I'm maybe not around you guys. When I come to events like this, I start sipping from sobriety. And the phenomenon of craving, which keeps some of you, I see year after year after year here, the phenomenon of craving for sobriety kicks in. And I'd never thought it, but it seemed. And I don't know how to give that to anybody. There's something within us that craves this sobriety, craves being with each other. And I'll tell you, if I get away from meetings, I stop sipping from it. And I've got some of the obsession to do it, but I may not have the craving. So I keep coming back.
You know, Damon, you had said something earlier, you know, you go to this jail meeting and, mm-hmm. you know, there's a guy there with 16 DUIs and, you know, and to me, it's the grace of God that gets me in these rooms. You know, God's grace got me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I was doing the same thing over and over again and it was miserable and all this stuff. But the work I do keeps me in these rooms. You know what I mean? You talked about what's different between, I think it's the work that you do. It's the work that all of us do in here that keep us from getting another DUI or whatever the drama is that is associated with it. So,
yeah. So here we're looking at Alcoholics Anonymous pages 78 through 82. That's a lot of pages. But if you look, and oh, I've kind of broken it down, and this is from Bill's own words, about the different kinds of offenses. Most alcoholics owe money. Really? I don't think that's going to make the front page, okay? Perhaps we've committed a criminal offense. Well, I for me it was, I only got caught once. But the perhaps is no, man. That was I used to get, anybody here get pleasure by sneaking around? I think that was my MO, you know. And I thought if I just didn't get caught, then that was part of the whole game, you know. But I was not overly successful at getting what I really wanted, which was a quality of life. Maybe we are divorced and have remarried, but haven't kept up the alimony. So, then this is about responsibility, isn't it? Okay. So many of these steps about becoming responsible. I love that one question. A great question for an alcoholic. What would a grown-up do? Let's pretend. Goes back to the tricycle again, doesn't it? The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Yeah. My wife, she had a lot of clutter, you know, in our house. But I tell you what, now she's got a lot of stuff, and I remembered that I married her because she gets into a lot of stuff. She's a fascinating woman, you know. And so a lot, I've been able to change the story today, and you guys have helped me. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. And that just is like, if it's not in this list, there's the rest of it, you know, fill in the blanks. So, Dana?
Yeah, Damon kind of kidded around and we all laughed, and it's that we all owe money, you know. And that's one of the amends that I see people give up on so easily, you know. They like, well, you know, God, you know, I mean, I do owe this guy money, but, you know, it's not that big of a deal, you know. I mean, we've just been so long ago, it wasn't that much money or whatever. And to me, if I'm going to do what I'm going to do something, I need to do all of it. And it may involve money, it may involve criminal offenses, and it may owe alimony or whatever those things. And then to Damon's point, etc. dot dot dot, you know, and through the tornado through the lives of others, because there's a million things that we've done that have been offensive to other people.
Mm-hmm. So next slide, and then this is an amends definition, and I kind of think I want to go to some other sources, some dictionaries, because I think it's getting an understanding of what really constitutes an amends, and I think this is getting with your sponsor to help you out with this. But to compensate or make up for a wrongdoing, okay? I like several different ones. To do something good to show that you are sorry about something you have done. So, again, action. So these amends are action words, okay? To compensate for a loss or an injury, right? But amends do not always result in reconciliation. So this is the idea. If you think that your amends is not complete until you have reconciled and you guys are all cool, you know, that's not, it's about the best possible relationships. And if the other person's not willing, you know, there's not a lot we can do. And Dan, I'm going to go to the next one because I think they're tied in together.
Please.
Unless you have something on here.
No. I mean, I like looking at the different ways of it, but to me, it all rolls up to make something right. You know, that's what it all boils down to, is I got to make something right.
Yeah. And now they have this type of amends I thought was kind of fun. This is from the Stanford Dictionary of Philosophy. I just find it kind of fun. That there are changes in external behaviors. Okay? So how I act outwardly to someone as an amends. Am I going to smile when I greet them? You know? If you're happy, you got to let your face know it, kind of thing. You know? All right. Am I going to wash the dishes when I'm supposed to wash the dishes? You know, there's external behaviors. And then changes in belief, that's an inside thing. What's the story I'm telling myself? Okay? And I think a lot of these amends almost have to start with change the story. I have to change. This one guy says, we are what we believe. The question is what we believe true? And that's good as far as it goes, but I go, I'm so much more. I am the awareness of what I believe. And in fact, I'm the awareness of my ever-changing beliefs. You ask me, if I am what I believe, then I'm changing all the time. You know? But I think what I am is the awareness of my ever-changing beliefs. And resolving negative emotions and attitudes. So this is on the negative side of it, you know. So when I changed my opinion about my wife, okay. It's funny, my sponsor said, I was complaining about my wife and the way she kept house. He said, how long did you drink alcoholically? I said, 10 years. He said, give her 10 years. I said, wait a minute, I mean, that's fair, but don't I get like 2 for 1 or something? Well, not too long ago, I was working with a guy who came through the jail, and we're sitting doing some work, and he says, I got a problem. I said, what's that? He says, I'm OCD. I said, that's wonderful. He said, what do you mean it's wonderful? I said, I don't know, we're going to find out. And it turns out he got a job cleaning houses. I told my wife about it. He says, I want his number. I said, well... You know, that's going to mess with, you know, being a sponsor and hiring a sponsee. And she insisted, so I gave her the number, and they hooked up, and he still does our houses and cleans the house. And I got to laughing because the day they met was almost 10 years to the day that my sponsor told me that. See, God will do for us, and He does it in His own time. And so I remain a retired atheist as a result of that. Adopting or resuming positive emotion attitudes. I got to get rid of the one to empty the bottle so that I can fill it up with the clean stuff. So I like this class because it says there's more than one. There's outside amends is one thing. There's an inside amends. There's a getting rid of the negative, and there's a replacing it with positive. Dana.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all throughout the big book, it talks about that psychic change, that change of thinking, you know. And it's brought about by a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening. And with that change of thinking, all of these things can come into play, you know. And all four of those things can come into play, and you can start acting and thinking differently.
So now these are classes of amends. And this is from page 83 of the 12 and 12. So this is, again, Bill writing and how he classifies his amends. Making of direct amends divides those we should approach into several classes. Okay? There will be those who ought to be dealt with just as soon as we become reasonably confident that we can maintain our sobriety. That's just a time saver. You don't want to have to go and do it 6 or 7 times, right? So, good idea, you know. Don't go over there drunk and make an amends, you know. It's probably not going to work too well. There will be those to whom we can make only partial restitution, lest complete disclosures do them or others more harm than good. And this is if I'm on a relationship basis rather than an outcome basis. If I want the outcome of making the amends, it's not going to work very well. If I'm wanting to build the right relationship, then I will consider what's good for the relationship. And that's my focus now. And I take me out of the equation. Then there will be the other cases where action ought to be deferred. And still others in which, by the very nature of the situation, we shall never be able to make direct personal contact at all. And I have to be okay if I'm out of the outcome business and I'm thinking that I can only get me feeling good if I do this, that's an outcome. Rather than saying, what's the best possible thing I can do for this relationship? See the tone of it? Yeah. Dana.
Yeah, and this is where a good sponsor comes into play. You know, I mean, when you start taking a look at your amends and what I think might be a good idea might be the worst idea. You know what I mean? And, you know, in the big book, it talks about we have some direction. We pray about it. We consult others. We pray about it. We consult others. And then we go out and make our amends. And these are the things that we need to do. And if I'm looking at my amends and I look at what's going on up here, I think I can come up with a pretty good way. You know, like there it says, in still very nature situations, never direct personal contact at all. And there's some things you just can't do, but there's ways to make an amends. I had a sponsee that was real promiscuous. You know, and it was a problem, and it certainly would not make sense for him to go up to these women's husbands and say, "I just want to let you know, I'm sorry. You know, this is, I want to make this right. I'm not going to do that anymore." You know, and I mean, it would have harmed him. But what we came up with is we sent him down to the women's shelter in Atlanta Union Mission, and he cleaned toilets every weekend for a month. You know, so he was making right. He was taking some action, and that's where you get with a good sponsee and you can work through some of those things and come up with a way to get rid of that garbage.
I think the ninth step, some of the best stuff we hear in anybody's story is their ninth step amends. And yet it's one of the things that people are most reluctant to do. Isn't that amazing? We're most reluctant to do this amends, and yet the greatest stories told in AA are the ninth step amends, bar none. So this is the little sign said, consequences just ahead. Little warning, okay? Good judgment. Wow, that we have got to have already had a psychic change for an alcoholic to have good judgment. I mean, that's like jumbo shrimp or something. You know? We usually want to sit down with some members of the family and readily admit the damage we have done by our drinking. You know, that's that eagerness, you know, and that is almost outcome-based, right? Because I want something. I want them to, you know, start loaning me money again. Bill suggesting maybe not that. He says, we may not want to say anything for several weeks or longer. First, we'll wish to be reasonably certain that we're on the AA beam. That means we've began to change and go away from quitting drinking to starting being a good husband for me, to start being a good father. See, this thing is not for quitters. Quitting never worked for me. I needed to start being a good husband, to start being a good father, to start being a good grandfather. And once this is for start. You guys are a room full of starters. And the only time I can start is today. I don't need to finish. Just stay on the starting. So good judgment will suggest that we ought to take our time. Okay? Now that's hard. I like this guy who said the only problem with instant gratification is it's not quick enough. You know, I didn't even want to have it. So we take our time. AA works very slowly, you know, and if we do it right in your long-term relationships, it works. While we may be quite willing to reveal the very worst, we must be sure to remember that we cannot buy our own peace. That's an outcome, right? I cannot buy our own peace of mind at the expense of others and my relationship with others. Dana?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know, I'm sure some of y'all in here, maybe it's a stretch to think it, but some of y'all been to treatment before. There's one phone that you get to use, and then you're standing in line to use the phone, and you hear people, and they're, "I'm so sorry, I didn't mean," you know, and they're trying to do that, because that guilt that's on them and that misery, you know, you're not masking it with drugs and alcohol anymore. And you feel bad, and your shame and guilt and all this stuff, and you want to get rid of it right away, you know, and I can understand that, but there is a process for this, you know, but it always tickled me because I was the first one in line for the phone because I wanted to get that off me. And to Damon's point, you know, I there was something else I wanted out of you, and I wanted you to know how sorry I was, you know, so we could get this thing back on track. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the one rule here, and I'm going to pick it up just a little bit because we're coming up on the hour, do no harm. You know, so there can be only one consideration which would qualify our desire for a complete disclosure of the damage we have done. That will arise in the occasional situation where to make a full revelation would seriously harm the one to whom we are making amends, okay, or quite as important, other people. This means if your amends is going to harm your bank account, that's not on this list, right? If you're going to pay the financial, it's going to reduce your bank account to pay the. So I don't think it says me in here. You know, it's talking about the relationship I have with other people. Dana?
The only thing, and I got to drive this home, it's just so darn important that when you get ready to make your amends, that you consult with your sponsor, pray about it, and make sure you make some good decisions, because sometimes my decisions weren't the best ones.
Yeah, and that's from page 86 of the 12 and 12. So now what usually happens? This is from page 78 of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is what you're to expect, you know. It's in 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Well, that's happened in all my life. Just, you know, I don't think I've ever had whatever I've expected has never really happened. But this is what's neat. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. That's like a magic trick, right? You see, it's like the fist. You see that fist? It looks really solid. Now I open my hand. Where did the fist go? Where does run go when you stop running? It's a nonsensical question. See, because when I change my actions, see, it's this feuds are actually a verb. They're not a noun. So rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress, either in myself, you know, or at least with other people. Or here's one a lot of people don't think about. The people who, around the situation watching you attempt this amends. We forget about that ripple effect that's out there. And I've seen that happen. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. Okay? Why doesn't it matter? I'm out of the outcome business. I'm tried and done with what I can do with the relationship. I've done as much as I can from what I have power to do. I have lack of power. I don't have that power. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. Dana.
You know, it's easy to read over 9 out of 10, but that's 90% of the time. 90% of the time the unexpected happens. And you know what we do. You'd heard me talk about we write the movie. You know, we hire the actors, and it's all written in our head, and it's never a good outcoming. You know, we're never going to say, well, I'm going to go in, I'm going to make amends with this guy, and we're going to shake hands, and I'm going to set up whatever I need to do. It's, he's going to throw me in jail, it's going to be miserable, he's going to punch me in the face. And 90% of the time, that never happens. And that satisfactory progress, somehow or another, you're going to make progress. You know, and so I know we're short on time, so that's all I have for that.
And the other one I love is when the guy says, who are you? You might have the wrong guy. I don't know. Readiness and responsibility. Now, here we are on page 87, and this is a guy sitting on the starting line. You know, are you ready? Because are you ready? This is the start of a new life. Above all, we should try to be absolutely sure that we are not delaying because we are afraid. That means I have a small God. Every form of fear is a form of atheism, I heard a guy say. So for the readiness to take the full consequences of our past acts, that's and to take responsibility for the well-being of others, relationship, okay, at the same time, is the very spirit of step 9. So for the readiness to take the full consequences of our past acts and to take responsibility for the well-being of others at the same time, that's interesting, we can do that. That's the spirit of step 9. Dana.
To me, it's all about faith. You know, I mean, you got to step out on some faith, and the opposite of faith is fear. And, you know, at this point, by this point in your program, you should have the faith that God's going to walk with you through this process and get it done and get it done right.
So I've kind of a little fun here with the 9-step promises. We wanted to put them in here. And I said 21 because it almost seems like I wanted to sort of break them down and have a bit of fun with it. So if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. That's one, right? Being amazed, by the way, is kind of interesting. It's kind of better than being ticked off, you know? there's this little Indian yogi. He says, to know reality, you must be astonished. Each and every one of you is some of the most amazing matter on this side of the universe. We're sending out probes trying to find you. I like, when I get up in the morning, my little mantra is wonder and awe. Wonder and awe. We are going to know a new freedom. The old freedom was do what I want to do when I want to do it so I can get the outcome that I want. The new freedom is doing what I ought to do because I want to do it. And a new happiness.
And it's not a happiness based on outcomes, because that never worked. It's a happiness based on healthy relationships. And the most important relationship I have today is my relationship to time. Because if I'm trying to get there, I'm going to use you and God and everybody else to help me get there. If I'm back there, and once I've taken care of my past, then all of a sudden I can be firmly planted in right here, right now, and wonder in awe about whatever's going on. So my relationship to time affects my relationship to God. So that's the new happiness. We will not regret the past, which means I go back and change one variable. I think, you know, if I'd have gotten sober 5 years earlier, I'd kept that big job, been driving a brand new car, had the family in the car with me, pulled out in front of a tanker truck, it exploded, we all burned to death. Wait a minute. That's not the way you play happily ever after. Don't you know the rules? You go dancing through the tulips with everybody. No. Reality is the unexpected. That could have as easily as happened as what has happened to me now. Both of those stories are equally plausible. So I don't regret the past because it's a colossal waste of time. Regret means to go back and do what Dana was talking about, being the actor, you change the script, the whole deal. So, nor wish to shut the door on it because it becomes my greatest asset. One thing I can do to help, I go into that jail meeting, if I didn't have the street creds of being a drunk, drinking a fifth of vodka a day, isolating myself, I would not have the creds to be able to work with these guys. We will comprehend the word serenity. Comprehend means it becomes total in me. It's not, and it almost is no longer a word. It really means something to me. And we will know peace. Dana.
Now, you know, I go back to what am I looking for in here? You know what I mean? I mean, I'm looking for peace and serenity, you know, in my life. And if I can comprehend that and make it part of what I really am, what a promise, you know? I mean, that, to me, that's just so important. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So no matter how far down the scale we have gone, I like this gal. She said she came into AA when she could no longer lower her standards to match her behavior. You know, and that matches me. I remember it was 3 o'clock in the morning, August 12th of 2004. I'd been quit for 2 days. And I just said the 3-word prayer of an atheist. And I said, I need help. And I think that's part of what it was. We will see how our experience can benefit others. It means I'm seeing you because I'm experiencing you. It's not just imaginary in my head. I'm seeing how you guys do this. That's how I know. I watch you guys do it. So I can see how my experience can benefit others. That, now, this could be bad English, by the way. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Does anybody see how it can be bad English? Shouldn't it be those feelings of uselessness and self-pity? Unless they're one. Unless uselessness and self-pity are intertwined. Once I become useful, what happens to self-pity? Once I stop being useful, self-pity comes back up. So I love, and this lady pointed that out, we will lose interest in selfish things because I'm not into the outcome anymore. And we will gain interest in our fellows' relationships. Self-seeking will slip away. I love Sandy Beach saying that's a magic word. That's like the rabbit disappearing. It slips away, just like that fist. Where does it go? Because I change in action. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. A complete psychic change. A personality change sufficient for recovery. Dana.
You know, you just said it. It's that psychic change. It's that change of thinking. I want everything to change. I want a whole outlook. I want a whole new look at things. You know what I mean? Or a new pair of glasses. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I couldn't resist this little symbol at the end here. Okay. And, I'm not finished with them. Hold on. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. Okay? We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Now, the thing with intuition is it's different than feelings. Ann Smith said, feelings are the fruit, not the root of my faith. I act on principles and I harvest my feelings. And after a while, I will intuitively act based on the principles. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves.
Well, that really, my case, yes, absolutely. Are these extravagant promises? It depends on what you mean by the word extravagant, I guess, but we think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize. Another magic word, right? They will materialize. That means that I will see them in front of me, just like I'm seeing you right now. If we work for them, Dana.
You know, I always go to these promises, and, you know, we go through the big book, and, you know, we go through the steps, and we learn about the allergy and the phenomenon of craving and the obsession and the progression, and we learn about a higher power, and we all agree on this stuff, and it sounds good, and it makes sense. And how can you get to this part of the book and say this is baloney? You know what I mean? You know, I can't do that. I got to believe. If I believed everything else that I've been going through this book to this point, to get to the point is, they will. And the key word in there is work for them. You know, this program is desperate for us to continue to work on what we need to do. Go ahead.
One of the things we've done in our home group is we have taken all of the promises in the book. We've taken page 63 and 64. Page 62 and 63. Then we take pages 84 and 85. And we take 164. And we've taken the 12 and 12. There was the part in the 12th step in there about that. And we put them all together in a packet. And we let the person who's reading them pick out whichever promise they want. Or to go into the book and find a promise that they want. Because this is not the only promises that are in the book. It summarizes them pretty darn well. But there's a lot of others that are in there as well. So we are at the end here, so I'm going to finish up then with this image. This is an image of a turtle with a biker helmet on, but his feet are replaced by Jeep wheels. With a rocket on his back, you know, and getting ready to get lit. So I get this image of, this is some of the guys I sponsor. You know, you want to try and they're real slow about, and I got to watch it because I'm going to get into their outcome and I'll be falling right into that. So sometimes I have to let the turtle move the way the turtle's going to move. You know, we're not ready until we're ready. As Chuck Chamberlain said, you can't see until you can see. You can't hear until you can hear. Dana, you want to wrap this up?
No, just, you know, it's just one more step in the process. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, there's 12 steps there for a reason. 8 and 9 are really important. And the one thing is you can look the world in the eye again. You know, I don't have to be walking down the street anymore going, God, I owe this guy money, or oh, I owe this guy amends. You know, one of my bigger amends was to my ex-wife and her family for the way I treated them. I don't have to do that. I went up for my daughter's graduation from college about 3 months ago, and I didn't have to dodge around them or feel any guilt or shame or remorse because I've made a living amends. And that's all I have for today,
yeah.
Damon.
Yeah, Chuck Chamberlain called it an inside shower. Okay? That we have an inside shower. I do want to thank Don and the committee for allowing us to do this, and for John for making these things available to you and recording it. And I want to say this one last question for you is, if you were at the happy ending, what would it look like? If you ever get to the happy ending, what's it going to look like? And I think it's going to look a lot like right now. Thank you all.